Duncan MacLeod, and this is the Tech Central Show. TCS is brought to you by MTN Business. Visit mtnbusiness.co.za to learn more about its solutions for your business, and we thank them for partnering with the show. Now, next up, I'm pleased to welcome Dominic Cull back onto the Tech Central Show. Dominic is one of the smartest lawyers you could hope to meet in the ICT industry in South Africa. And among other roles, he serves as regulatory advisor to the Internet Service Providers Association. Dominic, it's good to see you again. Welcome.
Thank you, Duncan. Great to be here.
Right, we're going to chat today, Dominic, about an issue that's been getting a fair bit of attention lately in South Africa's ICT industry, and that's the issue of fair share, which I think sometimes is known as or called fair play. And there seems to be a concerted push by the mobile network operators through ACT, their lobby group. ACT is short for the Association of Communications and Technology, and its members include MTN, Vodacom, Telkom, Cell C, Rain, and Liquid. Now, the concept of fair share, from what I can tell, seems to have originated in Europe, where the MNO's margins are under severe pressure, and that and the demand seems to be that the so-called OTT players like Netflix and YouTube and others must contribute to the rollout of, or the, contribute to the cost of the rollout of broadband infrastructure. Dominic, where is all this pressure for fair share coming from all of a sudden, and do the operators have a point?
Duncan, I think it's fine to recognize that the operators are important parts of South Africa, that in terms of communications, they do the heavy lifting in terms of connectivity. So where they are raising issues as they are now, then we should certainly listen. But perhaps it's the right place for me to start is just with the nomenclature. So this term fair share, which is used by the GSMA, by the MNO industry, without any indication of irony whatsoever. And really, having been involved in the local market on behalf of smaller players, sharing is something that our experience of the MNO industry is something they really don't do. Certainly when it comes to spectrum, they want it all. So this notion of fair share, which really comes from international humanitarian law, from things like rights to water, where rivers flow through multiple countries and things of that nature, it is deeply ironic and perhaps objectionable that this is the term which has been chosen for this battle between the giants. There's reference to how do we accommodate the smaller players, but certainly the MNOs have never shown a willingness to share or to accommodate smaller players in South Africa. So the notion that they should be entitled to a fair share is very difficult to swallow for smaller operators who've been on the end of their sharper business practices for quite some time. Having said that, Duncan, and going back to the fact that let's entertain the notion, let's recognize that this was raised in South Africa firstly in 2016. There were parliamentary hearings. That was really the time that WhatsApp was growing and starting to impact on voice and SMS revenue. And absolutely no traction that I can discern was gained from that instance. So the question is, why are we talking about it now? And partly that's to catch the ear of a new minister. Partly that's because there's an Electronic Communications Amendment Bill, which is being prepared for submission to Parliament, and ACT are hoping that they can influence what goes into that bill. And partly because of developments in Europe, as you've alluded to, and I think you carried an article by the esteemed Dr. Ngaba, who really dealt with the European argument. I think his view was it's not wanted or needed in South Africa. We have a very different context. If you look at the profit margins and what is being made in South Africa by the telcos, it's a very different scenario from Europe. Let me leave it there, Duncan.
Sure. I mean, the demand that the likes of Netflix pay some sort of contribution to the rollout of network infrastructure. Is this not a case of telecommunications operators, which have always feared becoming so-called dumb pipes, trying to resist once again the pressure they're feeling on their margins, and the fact that many people actually just do view them as dumb pipes, as a platform through which value-adding services like streaming video and other services are delivered? Are the operators not simply fighting a losing cause here? That in fact they are just going to become utilities, and their margins are going to come under pressure in the coming years.
So Duncan, maybe I can lead in with this, that it may be helpful to distinguish between the commercial imperative, which they're talking about, and then the regulatory issue that they're raising. So part of this is, well, there's this huge amount of content and demand, which we need to upgrade our networks to accommodate. And another part of it is saying, these guys are competing with us, but they're actually not regulated in the same way as we are. And from what I can see, there are two parts to that second argument, the regulatory one. One is, well, we think that they should be regulated, but we don't see that that is actually likely given that they're multinational corporations. So therefore, we as the MNO industry want our regulatory burden reduced. So it's an argument to say you're never going to bring them up to our level of regulation, therefore reduce what we are facing, and taking aim at the Competition Commission, for example, which, you know, has not made friends in the industry with the conditions it's imposed and the opposition to the massive deal and the length of time that's taken. So on that regulatory side, let's also recognize that there are initiatives in the taxation sphere to impose some kind of tax on a country level so that we ensure that we're capturing some of the revenue which is actually leaving. There's a, you know, for the Netflixes and the YouTubes of the world, they have to deal with the Film and Publications Board. So they are all required to register as online content providers, pay an annual fee of around 800,000 Rand, and they have to display the information around the nature of the content they're showing. Is it age 16, pornography, sex, swearing, whatever the case may be? So they've been brought into that content regulation side. The Department of Communications and Digital Technologies is also running a process to reconceptualize broadcasting. So we have this notion of broadcasting as being linear, SABC, but the reality is we now watch Netflix and Disney, et cetera, et cetera. So there's an advanced policy process to say we need to bring these OTTs into the content licensing framework. So instead of having a broadcast license, we'll now talk about an audio-visual content license. And video-on-demand services like Netflix will require a license there, and they will be regulated under that particular process. So probably by 2027, 2028, you'll find your YouTubes needing to get license exemptions and your Netflix, et cetera, needing to get video-on-demand type licenses. So the regulation is coming, and in my mind, it's coming in the right place, which is to focus on the content, because the majority of the OTTs, these large-scale aggregators that are or providers that are referred to, traffic generators, they are the content guys, the Netflixes, the Disneys, the Amazons. But the ACT, as far as I can determine, is calling for them to be included in the telecoms licensing framework, whereas they're not telecoms players. They are content players, and they should be licensed and regulated through the content licensing framework. So as an unconverged lawyer who doesn't know what broadcasting means anymore, I don't want content licensing issues brought into the Electronic Communications Act and the current framework we have, which actually works really well. So I think ACT are a little bit misguided in terms of saying we need to now amend the ECA to bring a content licensing category in. That's being done correctly through the broadcasting policy reform process. So let's not say that these guys are unregulated, because increasingly there are movements to bring them into the local licensing and local regulatory framework, and that deals with a lot of what's being raised. Another part of the regulatory argument is that a content service is very different from an underlying carriage service. So you want me to say, but we as network operators have different forms of regulation to content providers. Of course you do. Your underlying obligations are about quality of service, about throughput, about coverage. Their underlying obligations are going to be about online content control and, as you're carrying this morning, things around elections. So lots of processes to deal with the OTTs, and that really brings us back to an argument from ACT and others that this is a commercial issue, which, you know, goes back to we're struggling financially. I think Dr. Ngaba would say it's a little bit like the courier companies being required to pay for the roads that they deliver parcels over.
Mm-hmm. But it gets a little more interesting and perhaps a little bit more complex in that some of the content companies, and I suppose you can include Meta in the content definition, are actually investing quite a lot of money in infrastructure. Google as well. Google, of course, invested, built the Equiano cable that saved our bacon last year when four cables went down in West Africa. Meta has invested into Africa, and they're also investing and partnering with telecommunications operators across the African continent to deploy fiber infrastructure, particularly long-distance fiber infrastructure. And that doesn't seem to get mentioned much by the telecommunications operators when they're calling for fair share. I mean, would maybe just talk a little bit about that and the infrastructure investments that some of the so-called OTT companies are actually making on the African continent. And how does that impact ACT's call for fair share?
I think what it speaks to is that despite this call for fair share, which almost sets up these two industries against each other, so the OTTs on the one side and the network operators on the other side, what it shows is that they're already deeply enmeshed. There are multiple business relationships between the MNOs and the content providers, from resale of content on the one side through to we buy capacity on Equiano and to Africa. So we're actually using your infrastructure to satisfy demand, which has nothing to do with you. So it's a valid point. Again, I think the fact that we're getting all this submarine infrastructure and increasingly in-country infrastructure is something that we do need to look at. If a Google is coming in and lighting up fiber, then it is required to be locally licensed and will be subject to exactly the same regulation as the MTNs, Vodacom, Cell Cs, etc., etc. We need to be careful as South Africa about just allowing that infrastructure to come in and replace and compete with what we've got without there being fairness. That I can absolutely buy into, because that's comparing apples with apples. It's an infrastructure play and an infrastructure play. But it's a very different thing to look at these different levels of the value chain and try and tie them together in the way that ACT is trying to do.
How does it affect internet service providers? I mean, ISPs are obviously carrying a huge amount of traffic across their networks. A lot of it, I imagine, is Netflix and YouTube. What's the view of the ISPs on regulation and fair share? Is there pushback? Is there perhaps some views within ISPA that actually maybe some of these players should actually be doing it? Yeah,
you know, and probably on two levels. One, you know, there's recognition that the increased traffic means increased revenue, just in terms of the underlying connectivity product you're selling. And then, you know, the fair share arguments, again, they tend to pit the larger operators against the smaller operators. So ACT is speaking for its members, which are incumbent large operators, And it talks in its white paper at some stage about, well, we'd have to figure out how this works between the larger and the smaller operators in terms of the balances which need to be made. Again, historically, ISPA members' experience is that you haven't been able to approach the MNOs to get any kind of resale deal or any kind of sharing of their relationship with their customers. Until this recent MVNO explosion, you would have to go to Vodacom to buy Vodacom data. And the ISPs have been trying to get in there for decades, but just being met with a blank wall and trying to use regulatory obligations with a weak regulator and a strong incumbent just simply doesn't work. So from an ISPA perspective, you know, we're concerned about net neutrality. We're concerned about traffic prioritization, a particular multinational paying an MTN to say, cool, well, if we contribute to your infrastructure, you're going to prioritize our traffic. That is something that we would be very much opposed to. But the smaller guys are not whining. They're not feeling the same pinch, even though, you know, the ACT or ATC document talks about many of these OTTs competing directly with electronic communication services like voice. It's certainly not something that the VoIP providers in ISPA are raising as a challenge. So there's no push from the ground level for anything to do with fair share at this stage.
Interesting. Now, there's obviously a lot of lobbying pressure being applied by ACT on the policymakers and presumably on regulators as well. What, in your view, should the policymaker, and obviously we have a new, relatively new Minister of Communications, and the regulators, and I guess there are two of them here, ICASA and the Competition Commission, what should their approach be to this lobbying by the MNOs in favor of fair share? Do you think they should be entertaining this? Should they actually be launching some sort of formal investigation, or should they just be ignoring it?
I don't think ignoring it is correct. I think we do recognize that it's a very dynamic area. They seem to be targeting the incumbents' action through ICASA and through amendments to legislation. I'm not sure if I was advising them that that is the way I would go, because really about the length of time involved in those processes. They're not going to get this issue included in the Electronic Communications Amendment Bill to be introduced into Parliament this year. So they would be looking at a minimum of a 4 to 6 year process to get debate through around the kind of amendments they would want to look at. I don't know if ICASA at this stage has the power to launch an inquiry into OTTs. I would really, if I was them, be focusing on the Competition Commission and saying, you've done your data services market inquiry. You've had a good hard look at us. You understand our network structure, our pressures, our pain points. You are busy with a media and platform inquiry, which you're going to release a provisional report on in October. That's looking more at the platform economy and the publishers and how those big platforms are affecting. So the commission is already in the space. I would be motivating the commission to say, use your inquiry powers to have a good hard look over the time period at the impact of OTTs. Are there actually substantial issues here which require remediation? From a incumbent point of view, asking for fair share, what I hear you saying is unfair competition. That's what really comes through from fair share. And if you're worried about unfair competition and the playing field not being level, then approach the commission. Try and get them to do a detailed inquiry and understand these two markets and how they are colliding And for it to make recommendations, as it's done in its data services market inquiry, about how that's taken forward. There is no quick fix here. You know, as the MNOs, you're clearly not getting the results you want from direct negotiations. And, you know, again, ISPA would say, well, we've been on the wrong side of the bargaining power relationship with the MNOs ever since. And they're now discovering what it's like to be at the wrong side of the bargaining power relationship with the MNCs. So our local elephants are now fighting global elephants. And it's a position we recognize. It's hard to feel any empathy, but we do understand where they are.
I must admit, I've never fully understood the concept of network neutrality, which seems to be more of an issue that gets debated more in the US than anywhere else. Does the concept of fair share play into network neutrality at all? And is network neutrality something that we should be looking at again in the South African context potentially?
No, Duncan, I mean, you're 100% right that it's an American feature, really, with their history and cable and things of that nature. Mm. I think it's a good guiding principle to bear in mind when you are talking about fair share, that what we don't want is some kind of express lane, which is expressed because a Meta or a Google has paid for it to be expressed. So, you know, it comes back down to, well, how does the consumer feel about fair share? I think if you look at the comments to the various articles, consumers are extremely negative about it. They're raising the argument that they pay for the data, which is used to access this content, and they should not be dictated to outside of legality about what content they should be accessing or what services they should be accessing based on the data they've already paid for. So net neutrality, I don't think it's directly part of the argument, but as a guiding principle to say, let's not have a multi-lane internet highway. Let's keep the principle of natural flow and end-to-end, and as a consumer, I choose how I use the data I've paid for and what services and content I access.
Isn't that the crux of this discussion and this argument, though? I mean, as a consumer, and you've got a fiber line at home and you watch Netflix on it, you're paying a fairly substantial amount of money for that fiber connection. If the operator isn't making enough money to deliver the Netflix service to you, surely the solution is not to call for fair share. Surely the solution is to increase the price of that fiber connection to the end consumer.
Which is correct, but is a politically unpalatable response in South Africa, I guess. You know, we're very much going in the other direction.
Politically unpalatable or commercially unpalatable, because if one operator pushes up its prices, consumers will leave that operator for another operator.
Sure. But if all, you know, these things tend to follow each other. So you're unlikely to see one going up without the others following suit, especially if they're feeling the same kinds of pressures. But politically, there's huge pressure to reduce the cost to communicate. And we really haven't got it right from a regulatory point of view, but I think civil society started to make noise again. We for years have heard how spectrum and a lack of spectrum has been the obstacle to reducing data prices. We're now 2 years past a lot of spectrum being awarded to the mobile network operators. And I guess a lot of people just feel that, you know, this is the next line of excuses being lined up. It's no longer going to be the spectrum which prevents us from reducing. It's our difficulties with the multinational companies and the OTTs.
Lastly, ideally, how would you like to see this play out in the coming years, and how do you think it is actually going to play out?
Actually, how it will play out, I don't think there's going to be any material movement here from a telecommunications perspective. I see the action happening in the broadcasting and in the taxation spheres. I do think the commission could be persuaded to have a good hard look at it, in which case, you know, we'll wait for the outcomes of that in a couple of years and look at those. It's the noise, I think, is useful for the incumbents to raise the issues. It probably helps them in their negotiations with these multinational companies. So from a government perspective, I don't think there's anything they should be doing at the moment other than taking note of what important corporate citizens are saying and where their pain points are. You know, the minister's looking at other things which can help. So if we alleviate difficulties with deployment of networks, we alleviate difficulties with power supply, we make it easier for the MTNs and the Vodacoms to meet their obligations under their spectrum licenses, that's all going to help them. Those are things we can do. I don't think we can step into this kind of collision between industries which is evolving around the world and attempt to lay down some legislative or regulatory markers for that.
Okay. Okay. So it sounds like it's going to be a lot of noise for a bit, and we may see something, but much further down the line.
Yeah. So, and let's be aware of the issues for now. And clearly these are important for some. But there's also a lot of opposition from influential people and other parts of industry.
Dominic Cull is regulatory advisor to the Internet Service Providers Association and a specialist lawyer in the ICT industry. Dominic, it's always good to chat to you, and thanks for sharing your insights with our audience today. Much appreciated.
Pleasure, Duncan.